And we are back with the second half of Prepare for Freedom. And we have an amazing lady we're going to introduce you to in just a minute. Her name is Brenda Robinson, and she is a professional writer, entrepreneur, speaker, very successful. She's an editorial consultant. She is a lady who has been through some amazing challenges in her life, including starting into a whole new field in her mid-50s. She has her own business now called Potent Pen, and she will be telling you more about that shortly. And she is a lady that if you want to learn how to write better, to speak better, to write your first book, whatever it is related to writing and speaking, she is your person. We are thrilled to have her on the show. And just because we're rushed for time, I'm going to leave it with that without any further ado and welcome Brenda to the show. Hello, Brenda.
Hello, Sharon, and hello, Billy Bob, and thank you so much for having me.
We are delighted.
Yeah, I've been kind of curious about...
He's got a question for you.
Yeah. Later on.
No, I think you're okay, Billy Bob.
I heard that you've been called a professional fault finder. How do you do that?
And get away with it.
Yeah, really. I want to know this.
I don't always get away with it. The reason that one person in particular whose book I was working on, as a friend, I was going through it for her and proofreading and editing it, but I wasn't charging her anything. It was just doing it as a favor. And I got about halfway through, and it was pretty heavy work. There were a lot of things that needed changing and correcting. And so I got through half of it, and I gave it back to her. And she said, well, you didn't do the whole thing. And I said, well, I am a professional editor, and I was just doing this as a favor. And she said, well, you just like to find fault.
I told that too.
Yeah.
I thought about that for a while, and I thought, well, it's true in a sense, because I am finding things wrong, but I can't do my job unless I think of it this way, that I'm helping a good thing move into something better. And that's what I do. You know, I correct grammar and I change punctuation and I suggest. And I always try to only suggest, because there's always reasons for things being worded a certain way or conversational way. But I suggest a sentence be switched around, changed, if I think it will be better. But I never want to take away from the author's style or the author's sense of self. It's somebody else's book. It's not my book when I'm working on it, and I want it to remain theirs. So if they want to keep something that I think is absolutely icky, that's their prerogative, and I always work that way.
Boy, that's a fine line to walk, isn't it?
It can be, yeah, it can be. It's just gently suggesting something.
Well, you apparently know what you're doing, because I understand you've been a professional book editor for just under 10 years.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
But I also understand that this is a field that you kind of broke into. It was a challenge for you to break into it at the age you did. Looks like it didn't stop you. Would you like to tell us about how that worked?
Oh, sure. Well, for quite a while, I had different focuses as far as work. And then for a while, there was no work, and I was a homemaker. And so that was a career in itself, raising a child. And for several years, I was an actress, TV commercial and theater, and I also did PR for the same theater, that repertory company. In fact, it's in West Palm Beach near me, Actors Rep, it's called, and they just reopened a beautiful theater after many years. So I was an actress, and I was a mother and homemaker, and I was in retailing for a long time, doing office management in departments at Saks Fifth Avenue in Michigan. I was an art major in junior college, so fashion design, and I moved into a little bit of fashion journalism, and I worked for Women's Wear Daily, which is the trade paper of retailing women's clothing. And I also moved into doing ink and watercolor pictures for kids' rooms and bathrooms. That was when my daughter was a little baby and I was home, and it was either crossword puzzles or do some artwork, and I did artwork and moved into art festivals, coordinating them pretty successfully. But I always liked to write, and I always, in school, I was always like the editor of the paper or a reporter on the school paper, and I always loved that. And I went to a boarding school, a Church of England boarding school in Toronto for the 8th through the 11th grades, and I learned more about sentence construction and writing and diagramming sentences and correct grammar from the British point of view. So there was always that kind of simmering background of that. And then the last thing I really did before going into editing was I was a water aerobics instructor at resorts and privately right here in Florida. And I loved that, but I needed something more. So I had gotten involved in Toastmasters along with my husband, and someone else in Toastmasters had written a really wonderful book, but there were some errors that I noticed, but I didn't want to tell this person. But I was looking at his website, and it was pretty awful. Punctuation, everything. And you see that a lot on websites.
Oh, yes.
So I copied it and put in my corrections and mailed it to him, snail mail. Well, I didn't hear anything for like 6 or 8 months, and I thought, oh, no, I've insulted this wonderful person. What's going to happen now? And so, well, nothing happened. But about 8 months later, I happened to see him, and he said, hey, you do some editing, don't you? I said, yes. And he said, well, I have a magazine that I'm putting together for a speakers association, and I'm wondering if you'd proofread it for me. So I proofread it for him, and he liked my work, and we developed a relationship, and I have edited books for him, and he has recommended me to other people. So it was amazing how it worked out. And so I continued to do that. If I find something wrong and I'm interested in having this person as a client, I will find fault, so to speak, and go in and let them know. And I've had very few people react in a way that it seems like they were insulted. They seem to, maybe at first, but when I explain to them that it's really just something that I do to help things improve, to help have a better web page, a better book, a better article, then they seem to understand and really appreciate it. But it's a risk.
Oh, yes. Now, that's what I call managing risk. Yes, world-class thinking, managing risk, big time. Billy Bob has got one of his favorite questions to ask you.
Well, I tell you, I'm glad I don't have to write too much because I probably get insulted all the way around, but that's okay.
No.
I don't mind it. That's how you learn. I keep talking to these Toastmasters, and, you know, I can never figure out, do they make the best toast, or are they grill master, or or do they just make a nice, good bacon, egg, and a BLT sandwich? I don't know, you know, these Toastmasters. So how did you get so much involved in this Toastmaster? You don't sound like one, and I've already heard enough of them on our shows. But you don't sound like one. You don't act like one, in other words. I mean, that's a compliment to me.
Oh, thank you. I am kind of a maverick Toastmaster.
Okay.
You could ask anybody in my Toastmasters club, and they probably the most polite thing they say is that I have a quirky sense of humor. And they seem to enjoy it, though. But I am probably not typical. But I can tell you the way I got into Toastmasters, that at that time, my husband, who had been a journalist for many years, had been certified as a genealogist, and he was doing people's family histories. In fact, he did that for about 10 years.
That's good.
He loved it. He just loved it, but it's a very slow process. My husband wanted to go to Toastmasters so he could learn to speak better for the people who wanted the family histories and wanted him to speak at their communities. And I, being a former actress, was really up for it. I thought it'd be a lot of fun, and it really has been. We've been in it now for, I think, it's 7 years.
Uh-huh. Well, I'd like to take this in a little bit different direction for a moment. This is an area of personal interest to me, too. So I'd just like to share what we can on this in the time that we have. I want to talk a little bit on the spiritual side for a minute. You have an interesting background. You're currently a congregant and staff member of the Unity of Delray Beach Church. Is that right?
Yes. Mm-hmm.
And so you, if I understand correctly, are very much into what's called New Thought, metaphysics, unity consciousness, this kind of thing. Is this correct?
That is correct. Mm-hmm.
Would you just share briefly what this means? Because, you know, we have a lot of listeners on our show who, of course, are Christian, and there is more than one view of Christ. And if you could just take a minute and share how you chose this particular path. How were you brought up in it?
Okay. Well, I was not brought up in it. I was brought up in mainstream Protestant. The boarding school I mentioned earlier was Church of England, which is Anglican, which is Episcopal.
Mm-hmm.
And when we moved to Florida, there was one church where they had, and our daughter was 3 years old, one church where they had a Sunday school that had classes for preschool children. And it was in Palm Beach, and it was Bethesda by the Sea, a beautiful church. And so we went there for 10 years, and my daughter went all through Sunday school there and was confirmed there. And then we moved further away, and it was kind of far to get there every Sunday. So we didn't go anymore, and I actually didn't go to any church for 10 years. And I didn't like the idea of something I had to do every single Sunday in the services, and that was, I had to say I was a miserable sinner, and I wasn't miserable at all. No, that was part of my quirky humor there. The way this happened was I was in a group. It was a support group for people with eating disorders. And I'm a longtime compulsive overeater or food addict, however you want to put it. And there were all of us sitting there. And the therapist looked at me and she said, you should try unity or, we were talking about spirituality. She said, you should try unity or science of mind. She said, I think you would like it. So I tried both of them, and I was very taken with unity. You went into this sanctuary, which is Unity of Delray Beach. You just get this comforting, loving feeling, and it's hard to describe, but so many people going in there for the first time notice it. And it actually does attract a lot of people who have been in recovery for alcohol and drugs. And it attracts a lot of Catholics, and it attracts a lot of mainstream Bible Belt types who possibly they're hypersensitive or ultra-sensitive, and the strictness backfired.
That can happen, yes.
Yeah. And so unity is very gentle. And as far as Jesus, I can say what I feel about it, and that is that we learn to follow Jesus' teachings. We follow the teachings, not the man. In other words, there is no cross up on the altar. We are following what he taught. And the point is, for me, of unity is to learn to be like Jesus and like what he taught.
Yeah. I think you said that very well. I just wanted to give you the opportunity to share that point of view because there's a lot of different ways of thinking about Jesus, and I just wanted to make sure that you had the opportunity to share that. Now, you also mentioned that you had a challenge. Billy Bob, just real quick on that, you had a question, I think, about a challenge that she was experiencing. I think she's already talked about it a little bit.
Yeah, she did. You talked basically about a challenge you have. How did you handle a lot of your challenges today? I want to change this around on you just a little bit, if you don't mind.
Sure.
How?
Okay.
Hopefully. There's one thing about me, you'll never know what I might come up with. But
well, that's why you're good at this. One reason.
Yeah, thank you very much. Thank you very much. Is how did you get so interesting into handicapped people? And how did you deal, how did you get involved with something like this in that field?
Oh, well.
I'm just curious.
All right. Okay, I'm not sure what you're referring to. The first thing that came into my head was when I was an actress, we were offered by the Association for Retarded Citizens to do puppet shows around the area. We have a huge county, and we went all over. So I was in this puppet troupe called the Kids on the Block. The point of the puppets, which were life-size, was to teach the school children that people who were different in any way were also people, and people who made good friends. And we had a puppet who had cerebral palsy. He was in a wheelchair, cute little wheelchair they had. We had a blind puppet. We had one with Down syndrome who worked in a vet animal hospital. And we had a so-called normal puppet who was kind of obnoxious. I guess that was her handicap.
That's right there.
And so I got very interested from that point of view. More recently, my daughter, who got a heart condition a few years ago, probably caused by a virus that she had when she was visiting Bali. Anyway, so she's had a heart condition for a few years. She's a runner, was a marathon runner. And last February, she had a stroke and was put in the hospital, of course, and 4 days later had a second stroke and was totally paralyzed on her right side. And, of course, I was out there the whole time and for several weeks after she came home from the hospital. This was a young lady who perfection was important to her, doing things right. And to watch her go for her exercises and do everything the doctor said, and, you know, she is my hero. As far as other things to do with handicap, there are others. Maybe there's even one of mine that I'll be willing to talk about someday.
Yeah, that's,
you know,
more where I was going with.
We were just sensing you had a special caring, a special understanding, empathy with the handicap.
It goes beyond that, but I just don't talk about it.
Yeah, we understand.
Yeah.
We respect that. Believe me, we do. We need to wrap this up. Just really quickly, could you just tell us in like 30 seconds or less, what is the most important thing about freedom to you? What affects your heart and soul the most?
The freedom to love, and the freedom to love everyone, and the assurance that that will never be taken away.
That is beautiful.
It sure is.
Thank you. We so much appreciate having you on the show, and we hope we'll have the opportunity to get you back. We need to wrap the show up now, and just thank you again for coming and for putting up with the little technical difficulties we had. And
well, thank you so much for having me. I love talking to you both.
Thank you. We hope to have you back.
Thanks, Sharon. Thanks, Billy Bob.
You're welcome. Hope I can talk to you again.